to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm interviewing Lindsay Baroka. Lindsay is the author of the Emperor's Edge fantasy series, as well as the Flash Gold series and a number of standalone books in the fantasy and steampunk genres. Lindsay is also a full-time indie author as well as a prolific blogger. So welcome, Lindsay.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So first up, tell us a bit more about your writing and publishing journey.
I was kind of one of those people that was with a workshop and everything for about probably 7 years off and on before getting serious. But I was really dreading the idea of looking for agents. And, you know, I didn't really think that I wrote anything that was popular or that agents were asking for. In fact, a lot of them on their sites on Query Tracker, I think it was, they would say, please don't send that fantasy with the elves and dragons, and, you know, sort of the George R.R. Martin, Tolkien kind of stuff. They're like, just don't send any of that. We don't want to see it at all. So that was kind of a downer. But I was going to give it a try because that's what you have to do. Mm. And I remember joining a workshop an agent was giving on query letter writing. And then about the same time, I got my first Kindle. This was fall of 2010. And I found J.A. Conrath's blog.
As we all do.
I would say within like a week, I was like, oh yeah, I'm doing this. This is what I'm going to do. So by the time the query letter workshop ended, you know, I'd already decided. And I think I sent out maybe 5 queries as part of the exercise. Mm-hmm. But by the time they were even coming back, I'd already hired a cover art designer and an editor. And December 2010, I got my first novel online. And actually, I got both of them up within a couple months. And they weren't related, so I didn't have that serious thing going to start with. But that's kind of how it started.
And then you have also, on your blog, you talked about turning down a deal. So maybe you could talk a bit about that.
Sure. It would have been, let's see, this was about March or February of this year, or 2012 now. And I'd published 3 books by then in my Emperor's Edge series. I've been trying to write really prolifically, and you know, I've been managing about a novel every 6 months and then some shorter works. But so I got contacted by a new editor from Amazon's 47 North publishing arm. They were just starting up for fantasy, science fiction, maybe horror, maybe not, I don't know. And that was their new imprint. And she had read the Emperor's Edge books and was very interested in them. And she saw, too, that I had a blog and a Facebook page and sort of the platform. So she was interested in picking them up. And, you know, I was definitely flattered. I hadn't really thought I was at that point where I was selling enough to kind of attract anyone's attention. My books would, you know, they'd be in the top 100 for, like, epic fantasy, but not, you know, top 10 or top 20. But she said she enjoyed the stories, and I decided ultimately not to do it because I was in the middle of it's a 6-book series, and by this time I did have fans from Barnes & Noble and international readers that read through Smashwords, and with Amazon I would have required that the ebooks would have only been available in the Kindle store. They would have done paperbacks, it would have been other places, but that was sort of the big deal killer for me because I had this... You know, I was about to publish the 4th book, which ends on a cliffhanger. And how mean would that be to, you know, that the Nook people or the Sony people can come in and read it? So I mean, I'm open to the idea of a regular publishing deal at some point in the future, but I'm not in any hurry because I did reach the point last Christmas or so that, I'm doing this full time. I'm making a pretty good living. And I didn't know if I switch to a publisher, because you know, you suddenly you're getting less royalties and maybe you'll sell a lot more copies, but you just don't know. So.
Yeah. No, and it's interesting because I'm thinking about this right now. It's kind of like I was expecting to put out the third book in the series next month, and now I'm signed with an agent, and now I'm like, well, I can't put it out just in case the other two sell. So I know how that feels, but I'm sure people are kind of thinking, you know, some people will be wondering how Amazon noticed you, and you know how you managed to stay in the top 100 of Epic Fantasy, because even though you said at the beginning, you know, agents weren't that interested because of George R. R. Martin, right? The fantasy seems to have become bigger, and actually, in the Forbes list of richest authors, you know, J.K. Rowling is there. I guess Stephanie Meyer isn't really fantasy. Well, is that fantasy? No, it's not high fantasy or kind of epic.
Right? Kind of urban fantasy
Yeah,
or
urban
contemporary.
fantasy, it's still fantasy. I mean, you know, and then it was just, it's amazing how, and George R. R. Martin is in the richest list now. So have you noticed there's been a change in the genre? That's the first part of the question. The second is, how do you make the top 100?
You know, the first thing is, and I kept expecting it, like when I was looking at agents, I thought there would be more people, more agents that were interested in the secondary world fantasy because the Lord of the Rings movies were also huge. And yeah, George R. R. Martin on his HBO special and his books are doing so well. But I think a lot of the, maybe a lot of the agents grew up reading this stuff and they see a lot that's derivative and they're just maybe tired of it, or maybe they don't really know because there are. It's not a huge niche, but there's definitely a following of people that really do like the otherworld elves and dragons, and I don't actually have elves and dragons, but if I did, but so there's definitely a following. So it did surprise me that I guess what's really popular in fantasy right now is the urban fantasy, contemporary stuff, paranormal romance. So if you write those, I think you have a better shot at finding an agent just out of the slush pile. But as self-publishing, if you do well enough on your own, then they'll kind of find you. So.
And so let's talk about that, the top 100, and you know, the fact that, and a lot of people would say, oh, I'd love Amazon to come knocking at my door. So how do you think you have broken into that sort of top 100 and the full-time living side of things? Is that platform? Is that volume of books? What do you think?
It's definitely hasn't been any one thing for me. It's been kind of a gradual build. And you know, before this, I did the professional blogging thing and affiliate marketing, so I knew the importance of having a mailing list, you know, a newsletter. So now, basically, when I have a new book that's ready to come out, I've got about, see, I think I'm up to about 1,400 people on my newsletter. So I just say, hey guys, new book's out, go check it out, and that alone will get you up into the. Probably, I would say the top 20, you know, it gradually falls down again. I'll be curious when I start a new series with a book one if I could maybe catch more people. Because I think when people see you have book four or book five, they're not necessarily wanting to start there. And if you haven't finished the series too, I know some people don't want to get into something until they know the author's actually going
Gonna
to.
finish it.
With an independent author, even more, you know, like, oh, they could just go away. So I definitely think that having that newsletter, and I will at the end of my books, I encourage people to come find me on my blog, come sign up for my newsletter. Here's my Facebook and Twitter if you want to chat. So I think that sort of that afterward place is really where you can get people and yeah, you know, and sort of build your community based off of that rather than trying to randomly get people to follow your blog or your Facebook that you just kind of butted your head into their conversation on Twitter or something like, hey guys, come follow me.
I think what you've just said, and I go on and on about this, and still so many authors don't do it. So thank you, Lindsay. But you know, we're going to challenge everybody listening now. If you do not have a list on your site and at the back of your books, go do it now. Because as you said, and this is how John Locke has his success as well now. He has about 10,000 on his list from an email he sent out, and as soon as he has a new book, he emails everybody, people buy it, and as you say, you go straight to the top of the charts, because it doesn't take that much, does it? Within an hour, considering they change the rankings every hour, if you get people to buy on that first day, you can be a bestseller very easily.
Right. And it's like your first book's going to be hard. There's just no way. You really have to go out there and hustle. You know, I usually tell people you got to try to hand sell those first 1,000 copies or so. At that point, the Amazon algorithms kind of see that your book is selling and they start recommending it and it appears in the Altobots. But the first book's going to be hard. But after that, if you've done the right thing, if you've said, come sign up for my list and come follow me online, and people have enjoyed it enough to do so, you know, the second book is going to be easier. And with each successive book, you're going to have collected more fans and more readers. And so, you know, it's definitely not overnight success. And I know a lot of people want that and believe in that. And I suppose there are a few flukes where that happens for people. But it's more realistic, I think, to just think, well, I can build a career if I just keep putting out good stories that people will enjoy and I keep, you know, keep in touch with my fans. And
No, and I love that. And I love that you're in, you know, in that fantasy side of things. You're not the romance, erotica, whatever. So you're still making this living whilst in this smaller niche. So I love that. So let's talk about some other things. So I really find your blog really useful. I, you know, recommend it, and people should go and check out your blog. But you interview people and you talk a lot about how things are changing. And you did an interview a while back about the Amazon algorithms with a guy called Ed Robertson, and that kind of went around a bit. But I know you stay up on these things. So can you talk a bit about the Amazon algorithms? You mentioned a bit about it just then, but and how things have changed and how you think that's impacting pricing in particular.
Okay, well, first let me say I'm not an expert on this. I did interview those guys. I do like to kind of see what's going on. And I guess there's a small group of people, and Ed is one of them, and they really just like to check the stats and compare information, and they love that stuff. And I just want to interview them in the details. But so it's sort of the last few months, it seems, because, you know, with like Amanda Hawking and John Locke, that they were sort of the some of the early people that set their book to 99 cents. And this was sort of a tool that indies had because traditional publishers couldn't afford to do this. couldn't afford to do this. But so it was sort of an advantage because, of course, readers want a good deal. Who doesn't? So you'd have these millionaires that, or they sell a million copies, and big part of it was that they were 99 cents. And, you know, at the time, not a lot of people were 99 cents because Amazon, of course, tries to make $2.99 to $9.99 sort of the golden, you know, price range you want because of then 70% royalty. But if you're selling a million books at 99 cents, even 35 cents a book is a really good deal.
Yeah.
But so when I interviewed Ed, it sounds like, though, that Amazon is starting to weight things a little bit. Not on the bestseller list. That's just, you know, how many books have sold in the last 24 hours. But they have also these popularity lists. Apparently, this is what they use to kind of make recommendations. And their popularity lists are very prominent. If you're just surfing through Amazon and you click over on the left menu, you know, down through a category, they'll show you the top 100 most popular. And that seems to be more of a factor of all the sales within maybe the last 30 days. I think that's what Ed told me. This was back in about May we did the interview. And it's like Amazon's kind of like Google, and they're always tweaking and changing their algorithm. So who knows if any of this is still true. But one thing they noticed was that in the popularity list, it wasn't just based on books sold, that they were starting to weight things as for the prices. So a 99-cent book wouldn't have as much weight as a $4.99 book in the popularity list. So it'd be, you'd have a situation where it'd be popular or possible to be maybe number 10 on the bestseller list, but maybe number 50 on the popularity list because you are at 99 cents, and here's these other books at $7.99 or $4.99. And it's like you can still do well with a 99-cent book, but you have to sell a lot more copies of it to see the same sort of benefit as you did earlier as far as recommendations. And my guess would be that Amazon is just trying to make sure they continue to make good money, because obviously at, you know, they make 65 cents or something on a 99-cent book, and they have their charges. They have to pay for bandwidth and merchant, you know, services and so they're probably trying to encourage people to sell their books a little higher, would be my guess. But it is because of, as indies, we've used that 99 cent price point as an advantage over traditional publishing. It is a little bit of a hit to probably the community.
So, yeah, I've put my books after that discussion, I put my books up at $2.99 because I thought, you know, I don't want that whole waiting thing to come into play. But I've only got two books. You've got more. What are you doing with pricing?
I actually started at $2.99 also when I first released them. I think like a lot of indie authors, I was a little bit afraid or uncertain that my books were worth as much, or, you know, I'm a new author, I can't get that much money. Mm-hmm. But now I've got them all at $4.95 with the exception of the first ebook, which I give away for free. Mm-hmm. And as an introvert and somebody who hates pushing myself, I find it a lot easier to kind of promote. If I say, oh, hey, it's free, so check it out if you want to, but if you don't, no big deal. And I've found that I get a lot more people trying out the series, and, you know, more of them go on to buy the next books in the series. So.
No, I think that's great. So to do that, you just have the book free permanently on Smashwords, and the price on Amazon has adjusted.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I've heard of people sometimes have trouble getting Amazon to price match. I think they pay a lot more attention when it's a book that's already selling pretty well and has pretty good reviews. I think probably they have their little robots or bots or whatever, maybe monitor and check on prices more often. Because when Emperor's Edge to free, it was almost overnight, because I remember I did it around Thanksgiving thinking, oh, it'll go free by Christmas maybe, and that'll really help. And
yeah. No, I think that's great. And I think particularly for fantasy authors who often have six or, you know, more books, it's a really good strategy. And something I would like, you know, I'm actually planning seven in the thriller series, but if I sell them, it'll be difficult. But I actually think that's a really good strategy. So have the first one free rather than, you know, 99 cents, and then have the others at a higher price. So you're using $4.95, which is great. So you must be making, that's like, what, $3.50 or something per book?
It's about $3.30 something.
Yeah. So that's brilliant. So, you know, and this is the difficult thing for people. It's trying to work out what they're doing. So when did you change your prices? When did you become more confident in yourself as that writer?
Well, I think when I put book three out, I bumped them up from $2.99 to $3.99. And then, I don't know, they were doing pretty well. I was like, well, let's just try $4.95. And it didn't make any difference whatsoever.
No,
At that point, I know some people will try even higher, $7.99 or whatever. But I like that I can make a nice income. And at the same time, there's still a deal compared to traditionally published books, and my novels are all over 100,000 words, so they'd be like 450 pages or so as a paperback. So it's not like they're short either. So most people, you know, I've definitely had people say, oh, you're not charging enough. can we pay more? Can we donate? And I'm like, no, really, I'm doing pretty well. Just we need more out. If you're only selling maybe 300 or 400 copies a month, and I don't mean only like, oh, that's so easy, but 300 or 400 copies a month of each title. You know, and I know there's quite a few indies out there doing that. You're looking at $5,000 to $10,000 a month in income. And most places in the world, that's a very reasonable full-time income. So,
and that's brilliant. And I hope everyone's paying attention, because that's exactly the point. So you have a few books in a series, you're pricing them sensibly, you still have one at free. I mean, you know, you're not doing anything outrageous here. You're just putting out consistently good books, and people like them, right? I mean, I think that's the secret that we're all looking for.
It depends on how fast you write. It can be a slow, gradual build if you write only a novel a year. If you're able to write three novels a year, four novels a year, which I'm not there, but, you know, you can hustle things around, you know, get things moving more quickly. But it's the same route, no matter how quickly you write, will work. It's just patience is required, and I know that's hard.
It is, and it's funny because I interviewed the agent Donald Maas a while back. He wrote the breakout novel and all kinds. He's a, you know, big New York agent, and he said that in traditional publishing, you know, you have to have 3 to 5 books before things really kick in, which is interesting because nowadays, you know, new authors only seem to get one book try, and if they don't hit it out the park, you know, they're kind of gone. But what you're saying seems to back that up as well. It's kind of, so how many do you have right now?
I have four novels in my main series, one standalone novel, and then I've got a couple of novellas and short stories. I like to, if I can, publish something in between, like those 6 month gaps, to, you know, it keeps your income going because, of course, you get a big boost whenever you have a new release. Everybody goes to get that. And it keeps your name in people's minds, and they're excited to talk about your work on Facebook. And somebody started a fan forum for me now, so that's
Wow, congratulations!
There's people posting fan fiction and fan art, and it's just so exciting and flattering to me. I thought you had to be George R. R. Martin or somebody really huge to have a community like that start up. So,
wow, you know, and we really think, oh no, I'm blown away by that, because when we think about what success is, you know, and I meant, you know, we mentioned George R. R. Martin on the Rich List, earning 20 million this year, TV series. I mean, most of us can't even imagine that kind of success, right? But to have a fan forum about your work, I mean, that's precious.
Oh, I know. So I was just so flattered, and I stop in there, you know, like, do you guys have any questions? I find them very, funny people, hilarious people, which my books are kind of quirky. I have that sort of sense of humor too, so it makes sense that, but they'll just be cracking me up. They'll be on Twitter in the morning, and I get included in these little, you know, conversations they're having about the characters in the books. And some of them even made Twitter characters, or on Twitter, they've made my characters have Twitter accounts, and they'll chat back and forth. And I kind of like, oh, people think I'm, you know, I'm all six of these people on Twitter. I'm like, not me.
No, I think that, look, that's brilliant. And so, I mean, that's exciting. And something else exciting I wanted us to talk about was, you know, you're in America, obviously, I'm in England. The Kindle, Amazon Kindle is pretty much, in England, it's the most dominant force. We don't even have Nook yet. We do have Kobo, but obviously in America, Nook is quite big. But just yesterday, Amazon announced they're opening a Kindle store for India, and they're also opening up the KDP backend to Indian authors. Now, I think this is huge because there's such a massive Indian population of English language speakers, and I don't know anything about them, you know, whether they like fantasy or thrillers or whatever. But what do you think about the expansion of ebooks beyond the US and the UK? And what do you see coming up in terms of, you know, opportunities?
Definitely. I think it's very cool. I think, like, so far they've done France and Spain, I think, and the UK. And I'm starting to sell pretty well in the UK, actually. They must think my American spelling is atrocious, but... But really, I don't know anything about India as far as what people like to read there. Would fantasy be big? But I've definitely been, you know, surprised by how many people are reading my books and finding them often through Smashwords is big with the international readers. Mm. I had people from South Africa, several countries in Africa, lots of countries in Europe, people in Asia. You know, just from all over the world that have picked up the books and enjoyed them. And, you know, it's surprising that how global it is, that you might not even get that with traditional publishing, where your deal would probably be for probably publishing the books just in the US for me, or in the UK if you had a UK agent. So it's really interesting with ebooks how it's global and anybody. And I've even, I can't remember who it was, but I've heard of indie authors who have actually footed the bill to have their work translated into, like, I don't know, was it Chinese? Or, you know, I can't even imagine how much that would cost. But I think if you're doing well enough, sure, why not? And
yeah. Never know. I think, though, like you're saying, that the English, you know, a lot of people in other countries read in English, and that's an opportunity. But I actually think that it's also with pricing. It'll be interesting with your $4.95 price, because the Amazon store for India is in rupees. So with the conversion rate, it would seem obvious that indie books will sell more in India than traditionally published ebooks because of the price difference. So if your book is at $2.99 US, I don't know how many rupees that is, but it's obviously more in their wage bracket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was kind of wondering too if you would, because Amazon lets you pick your price for if you know anything about the exchange rate or anything. I was wondering if I should price it less expensive over there, just because I think that the average earning salary is quite a bit lower. I know that a lot of people in the online business will have VAs from Asia and some of the countries where the price, the standard of living is a little, or I guess the price of living is just less expensive, and maybe $800 might be your monthly salary, like a really good monthly salary, but it costs less to obviously to rent that and everything. But so I was thinking, well, $5, would that be a really expensive book over there? Maybe I should try to
But the
figure out.
problem with that, the problem I see with that, and this is when I, because of course you go into the back end and you can click now to put it in rupees, and but Amazon price matches, don't they? So that if you change the rupee price to make it cheaper, won't they change the US dollar price to match?
I don't know. I would think not, just because I don't think they're out there looking at the exchange rate in other countries and monitoring that. But
Oh, I don't know.
yeah, you log in one morning. Why book's only 13 cents? What happened?
But no, I want to also ask you about Smashwords and about the other platforms. So, I read on the Kindle and I love the Kindle back end. I think it's brilliant. And I don't, because Nook Publit isn't open to people outside the US. So I don't really like them, but I'm on them. What do you see in terms of a percentage split between the platforms, and have you found any good ways to promote on Nook versus Smashwords versus Kindle?
I've definitely am one of the people that gets the most of my money from Amazon, probably about 90%, maybe 85% now. I've been selling more at Barnes and Noble and a little more at Kobo and Apple. I actually did a screenshot of my ebook. I found it in Apple's Epic Fantasy section, and it was actually on the front page next to, George R. R. Martin and some of the other new ones. But that doesn't equate to the amount of sales as at Amazon. Because I think a lot of iPad people, because I have an iPad and I read on the Kindle app.
Me too.
I think that a lot of Apple people use the Kindle app, and it seems Kindle's a more friendly store to browse through and find things. But yeah, I think maybe 5% of my income from Apple, 5% from Barnes and Noble, and another 5% from Smashwords, Kobo, and the other little ones combined, Sony, and then about 85% from Amazon. As far as how to do well, I started doing better there. I sold practically nothing at those stores until I did the free ebook. So I think it's the same thing there. People browse for the free stuff, and then if you can hook them with your first one in the series, they're gonna, more likely go on and try the other ones.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And yeah, I mean, I think people are so overwhelmed with how many options, and there are new companies springing up every day now. And in fact, I get a lot of emails saying, which company should I use? But I mean, you're still, and I am still, with the main ones. The recommendation is still to go as direct as possible with the actual distribution sites, or use Smashwords. So have you, I mean, have you seen, I mean, the changes in this whole self-publishing space, where do you think it's going?
Well, I like to do everything myself, or hire somebody to do the formatting and that sort of thing. But I've seen a lot of businesses cropping up that want to cut, that help authors by doing handling all the distribution and cover art and formatting and all that for them. And I think that's okay if it's a fair price. Some of them are a little ridiculous, like $1,000. Like what? For formatting and distribution, basically. So, I think there's more and more people trying to get in on it. And I've had people contact me from little up and coming stores that want to do, like, oh, come, hey, list your book with us. And, I think probably like you, I have so much going on that it's just, that's not really a priority. I look at their site, and because I do have that internet background, I kind of just glance at the Alexa rating for the site and the Google PageRank, and I'm like, okay, my blog gets way more traffic than this site does, so there's no way that they're going to sell probably any books. But I don't want to be too dismissive of them, but I think if you just stick with the main places and try to get your work out there where there are a lot of eyeballs, You know, another thing I've done is the Podio books. I have the first couple of my series out there on iTunes and Podio books for free. And I've had quite a few people tell me that that's where they first found my work and they went on to buy the ebooks. So I think the more marketplaces you can be in where they're busy marketplaces, and there's a lot of reading.
That's interesting, and I know we're almost out of time, but on the Podio book, so for people who don't know, it's an audio book. You basically download it. It can be serialized, or you can download it all at once. Did you record that yourself?
I did not. I actually hired someone to do it because I didn't, you know, it's a lot of time. Of course, you know from a podcast that it's a lot of work to edit, and I couldn't, you know, I just couldn't imagine sitting down and taking the time to do it. And I got a pretty good deal on it because I kind of plugged the site at Starkfire Productions on my own site. And they're pretty, I mean, not that affordable if you're brand new and starting out, but I think I've gotten back what I put into it. And I also ran a Kickstarter campaign this past spring. And that will cover book three and book four being turned into patio books. So, but I have met people like Nathan Lowell. I interviewed him on my site, and he's another indie that he went with Ryden Publishing, but he does really well, and he built his fan base entirely from putting like his 6-book series out on patio books, so that when he went to release his first ebook, he had a huge fan base built up from that. So it's another way that you can stand out. And it because it is takes more time to do it, to edit and read the book, there's less competition in that market, so a little easier to stand out.
That, you know, it's really good you brought that up because I've had Scott Sigler on the podcast, who of course was also, you know, does all of his books on audio, and a number of other people, T. Morris, and you know, and I love it, and I keep thinking I must record, you know, I must record a book, but I'm interested to hear that you hired somebody. So that's a good alternative for people if they don't want to do it themselves, because of course you have to know all the production side as well, and I think Nathan's were full productions, weren't they?
Yeah. And he did it all himself, but he really seemed to enjoy it. You know, I guess he has really sort of that narrator, orator voice, and he's even done a couple for other people. So for people that enjoy it, definitely you can save a lot of money doing it yourself. I think maybe about $200 to get a really good mic and a good setup, but it's definitely more affordable than. But even, you know, if you look at it as an investment, if you hire someone, maybe it depends on the length of your book. Usually, but let's say it was like $1,500 to $2,000. You know, that's an asset you have for the rest of your life. And mine are about to go into Audible. So, you know, probably eventually that'll make that money back in sales of the audiobook too, in addition to helping promote my work.
Yeah, and sorry, can I ask on Audible, how are you getting into Audible? Because you can't do that as an independent unless you've got more than five books, is that right?
I'm not sure, but the Darkfire Productions guys have a contract with Audible, so I'm just
Right.
going to them. So, and I think that there's ACX or something like that,
Yeah,
where
that's ACX is also only for Americans.
those pesky American companies, they're so snobby.
It's like the rest of us don't exist. I mean,
Like there aren't readers from all over the world that want to, yeah, it's crazy. Hopefully they'll figure it out and
exactly. Well, look, first of all, tell us a bit more about your books. We know they're not elves and dragons. What are your books about?
Sure. One reviewer called them the A Team of Steam. So, kind of a steam era industrial revolution world, secondary world. And my heroes are these kind of wrongly accused outlaws that they're trying to clear their name and also at the same time thwart plots against the emperor. So, and like I said, I've got quite a unique sense of humor and I've been told my books are pretty funny. So, adventure. Yeah, heroic fantasy. First one's free. Anybody wants to try it?
Fantastic. So, where can people find you online?
I'm so everywhere. My site and my blog, lindsaybaroker.com. You know, I'm on Facebook and Twitter, and I'm even on Pinterest now. I've got my fan art up there, so you know, and of course on Amazon, the books and everything are there. But if something comes to my blog, all my other links to Twitter and everything are on there. So,
Fantastic. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, Lindsay. That was great.
all right, well, thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time!